Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Elise, really, your knowledge of all things business, but real estate in particular, let's talk about this national eviction ban being overturned by the courts.
Yeah, I have to say, I think the Biden administration was pretty disappointed with that. On the other hand, I think there's some cheering going on for particularly small to medium-sized landlords who have been really struggling to get their payments made and to keep those properties in good stead and have seen them, you know, just really tragically on all ends struggle with getting those payments done.
I mean, there's really a belief, if you say real estate owners, that everybody who owns commercial real estate is rolling in money and the buildings aren't leveraged and there aren't loans and they're not trying to, it's not something that's been in someone's family for three generations and they could lose it with inheritance taxes. It's not like that. These people need their income as well, right?
Well, they do. And so when you think about last year with COVID, a lot of people have been buying, you know, between 1 and 10 properties, whether it's a condo or a single family house or even a multifamily house. They're buying them and they were renting them out on Airbnb or, you know, VRBO, right? So this has become a new modern thing, but it's inexpensive to own normally. You could buy with very little down payment and interest rates are at an all-time low. So people were buying these properties and then renting them out by the night, by the week, by the month. And all of that stopped last year. People just canceled en masse and they got their money refunded from Airbnb, for example. And so all of those property owners then still had to make all their payments to their own mortgage lenders.
But that's, Elise, to interrupt you real quick, but that's different because for me, that's a business decision that they made to get into the Airbnb rental business. It reminds me of 2007, 2008 when everyone was flipping. Isn't that different than the people that own buildings and they can't evict tenants who are there full time versus somebody who got into the real estate business and got burned by it?
Well, but I think there's is it really different? I don't know that it is really different. You've got people who own two and three flats or small apartment buildings, and now they've got tenants in there who just stopped making their payments. So whether you've got people who were supposed to rent your property and then they don't show up and they don't pay, or you've got people who are living there who don't pay, in some cases it might be worse because they're not, you can't get rid of them. You know, I think they're both resulting from this pandemic that we've had.
Yeah.
And I think the realization of that has caused a lot of problems. Now, there's been some help for people who couldn't get evicted, right? And that's really where it's interesting because only about 10% of the $42 billion that had been set aside by the federal government to help people stay current with their rent, only 10% has actually been applied for. And when you read some of the stories about why more people haven't been able to get their applications approved for this payments, what you find is that when they lost their job, they now have to go back to their former employer and get paperwork filled out. And just doing that from a year later or 6 months later, however long it's taken them, it has been proven to be really difficult. And so the hurdles are keeping people from getting the money, which would then pay the landlords, which would make everybody happy.
And if the Fed ends up increasing interest rates in December or even, I don't think they'll do it in October, but in December, then that affects mortgage rates, right? And then you have a whole nother problem.
You do, and it does. And that will be an issue, particularly, you know, when you own buildings, a lot of people don't realize because you think, oh, a 30-year loan, you just, you know, fix it at 2.78 and you're done. But for commercial properties, you actually don't get 30-year mortgages at these kinds of rates. You might get a 5 or a 10-year loan. And every time those interest rates go up, that's going to present a problem for people. And the way you value your properties is different as well. So with commercial properties, and we'll take it out of the, you know, the realm of just, you know, people owning apartment buildings. But if you look at warehouses or you look at other kinds of commercial property, the way that that's valued is by how much people are paying to be there. And so if you've got vacancies or you've got tenants that aren't paying that are still there, that causes a devaluation of those properties.
Great. That's terrific. Thanks, Elise. I got Pete Zimmerman pounding on the glass like he's at front row at a Hawks game in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup. So everyone can tune in after at 1 o'clock for Elise Glink, and her business is Think Glink, and she'll be filling in for Anna. And
thank you.
Yeah,
will do. I'll stick around.
My 17-year-old son, who turned 17, Cooper Gimble, on Friday. So happy birthday post-mortem to Coop. He said to me the other day, I found 70s rock. I like the Eagles. And he went through a whole bunch of other music. And I'm just like, where did this come from? Right? And it is funny how kids just find different genres of music, and they have such an open mind to what's going on. And the question is, do adults have an open mind? And so we've got a couple minutes to talk about the open-minded of business. What's more open-minded in the business world than being an entrepreneur? What's more open-minded than building a business? And so what came out last week was the Inc. 5000. So Inc. magazine is published out of New York, and it's really the epitome of the entrepreneurial startup magazine. And every year they list 5,000 of the fastest growing privately held companies. Now, I'm a little biased that I love this because my company's won it 12 times. But we didn't make it this past year, and that's okay because of COVID. But a lot of great Chicago companies did. And so what I thought about doing was just spending 5 minutes and listing off all 250 some odd companies. But that would be crazy. But just a few of them that made the 500 list. So there's the Inc. 500 that's in print, and then 5,000 that's online. But Molo Solutions, a logistics company out of Chicago, grew almost 8,000%. They're number 41 fastest growing privately held companies in America. CoinFlip, a financial services firm, grew almost 6,000% out of Skokie in the northern burbs. CurlMix grew 4,100%, a manufacturing company. The best industries grew. HealthJoy, a company located in downtown Chicago, a really cool technology health insurance type platform, 2,900%. Packed with Purpose, number 149, 2,790% growth for a consumer products company. And it just goes on and on and on and on. And so kind of like Mr. Irrelevant in football, who always gets publicity, we have companies that go down into the 4,000s of the fastest growing. Now, think about that. It doesn't get the high profile, but you're one of the 4,000 fastest growing companies in the country. I mean, how cool is that, that we've got over 250 companies that made the Inc. 5,000 list? And there are companies that go from, I'm just going to read some of the industries, healthcare, manufacturing, IT systems, food and beverage, security, software, human resources, logistics and transportation, computer hardware, IT management, business products and services. I mean, it's just, I have a list of five pages of companies. ShipBob, which has been in the papers recently in Chicago for raising a huge, I think they may even be a unicorn. I think Pete's nodding, so he's agreeing with me. I think it's over $1 billion valuation for ShipBob, and they grew over 700% in the logistics space of what they're doing. And those guys, I've gotten to know some of them, are just super, super smart and bright and aggressive. It's just a cool story. So I want to talk about that of entrepreneurship and what goes into it. And when you bootstrap a company, so there's expressions that people talk about. And there's bootstrapping, which means you own the company, but you didn't go take in equity partners like venture capital, and you're doing it yourself, which is kind of the old school way to do it before the late 90s came on and technology companies. Because what venture firms do, and there's nothing wrong with it, is they'll invest a bunch of money in a bunch of different companies, and you don't need all of them to make it. And then you have the founder that's playing with somebody else's money a little bit, and there's a little bit of a different mentality than when you do it yourself. You mortgage your house, you take out money in your credit cards, you take a little bit from mom and dad maybe, and you roll the dice, and bad things happen. If it doesn't work, you file for bankruptcy versus somebody else pulling the plug and telling you to go home and they're taking the ball away. And then you have, people that are going out with VCs and they're quitting their jobs, right? They're working for a Fortune 500 company or a legitimate small, medium-sized company, and they're making real money. And they say, you know what? I've got an idea. I'm going to follow my entrepreneurial dream, and I'm going to quit and I'm going to go take my idea to venture capital firms because I don't have the money or I don't want to go into that kind of debt. And I'm willing to share my idea and the rewards with it with somebody else. And that's awesome. Right. So you have these two different platforms, which are totally different. It's like selling a service versus selling a product. They each have strengths and weaknesses, but they're each equally hard. And you go in because when you do it yourself, you don't have a board of directors. You don't have people that are threatening to pull money or you're trying to raise money simultaneously. So there's different skill sets. And when we're talking about the Wintrust Business Lunch and the value that a bank has and what Wintrust has been so awesome at doing in this city at helping companies, being their lenders, working with VCs and private equity firms on debt financing, is that Chicago is still, in my opinion, the preeminent city for business. It is the great heart of this country. And as I've said numerous times, filling in and as a guest with John, is what we've got to do is make sure it stays that way because we've got these great people. And how do we do that? We've got to figure out the Chicago public school systems and we've got to figure out violence. Those are the two things that will turn businesses away from wanting to be in Chicago. But the bright side and the optimistic side that everybody listening should be excited about is there's over 200 companies on the Inc. 5000 list, which is where I started. And those companies are growing by leaps and bounds, and they're hiring a lot of people. And that's not even to mention the companies that didn't make the list that are hiring, and the entrepreneurs that are going to leave those companies and start other companies, and we want them to stay in Chicago and grow their businesses. That's the type of business community we want to have here. And when you walk down Michigan Avenue and you see vacant stores and you see the police cars all the time, it makes you wonder. But there is a cloud over things in the city right now, there is also a beam of sunlight coming in of optimism. And that's absolutely a fantastic thing that we should be excited about. But let's go to something more business related and more fun. And let's go to Jim Dahlke from Inno. And Jim, how are you?
Hello, Tom.
Yes. Okay. I can hear you now.
Yes. I'm here.
Okay.
Hey, sorry about that. Thanks for having me.
No problem whatsoever. So let's talk about the city alleging that business practices are deceptive and unfair by Grubhub and DoorDash rather than their unfair practices of high taxes. So let's talk about DoorDash being sued and Grubhub being sued.
Sure, yeah. So on Friday, news broke that the city is suing its homegrown tech firm Grubhub, as well as Grubhub's rival DoorDash, for allegedly deceiving customers and hurting restaurants, the city says, during the pandemic. The city announced filed two lawsuits against the meal delivery companies for, quote, deceptive and unfair business practices that harm restaurants and mislead consumers. Specifically, the city says that both companies lured consumers into a, quote, bait and switch with small delivery fees up front, only to charge misleading fees at the end of the transaction. The city also says that the companies hid the fact that prices on their platforms are often significantly higher than if someone had just gone to the restaurant directly to order. The city says that they advertised order and delivery services from restaurants without their consent. The city also specifically said that Grubhub violated the city's emergency 15% commission fee cap, among with several other things that the city alleges they did. So certainly an interesting lawsuit from the city of Chicago against one of its own. Grubhub, of course, a Chicago-founded business launched in 2004, really has become one of the crown jewels of the city's startup ecosystem. And
I guess the moment they sold out to the moment Grubhub sold to a foreign company, no one in Chicago politics cares about him anymore. Is the moral?
That must be it. But it's Chicago. Certainly, loves its local tech success stories. But here we are now, the city turning it and putting a Grubhub front and center in the middle of a lawsuit. Grubhub, for its part, says that the lawsuit is, quote, baseless, and they say that the allegations the city put forth here are not correct, and they plan to aggressively defend themselves in court. So we'll have to see how this turns out.
Well, I'm all, for one, this number 8th favorite radio fill-in host at WGN is for ignoring the crime and prosecuting those criminals, and we should go after the white collar thieves that are out there charging 50 cents more on the delivery. I think that's a good use of our resources. So but from the ridiculous to the sublime, let's talk about Chicago betting apps that are raising $6 million heading into the NFL season. And my guess is if they're going to make any money, they're taking the opponent of the Bears and the under if Andy Dalton's playing quarterback.
I think that's a pretty good bet. So the company in Chicago is called BetSpurts, and they're a really interesting kind of up-and-coming betting platform, really more for kind of social interaction and information. So they've built a platform that lets you follow betting experts across a range of different sports and sort of, you know, either tag along or fade certain experts' picks based on how they're doing. And just last week, they raised $6 million in a Series A round, and have done some acquiring as well to kind of expand into the fantasy sports side of things as well. So BetSpurts doing a little bit of the gambling, a little bit of the fantasy sports, to date have raised about $9 million as they kind of look to be this social platform for gambling and fantasy sports. So a really interesting kind of up-and-coming startup here in Chicago.
Now, I don't know if you know the answer to this, Jim, or not, but I'll ask. So they raised $6 million. Is that for marketing? Is that to hire really big guys to go beat up people who owe them money when they don't pay? What's the $6 million for?
Yeah, so great question. So yes, they're going to be doing some paid marketing. They're using this to fund some acquisitions as well and to grow the team. So really what they're going to be doing is hiring some tech folks and really kind of building out the tech team here. So, you know, this is an example of a company that's really, you know, catching some of the tailwinds of the legalization of the sports betting industry. Sports betting is, you know, becoming legal, and there's, you know, laws on the books in many states across the U.S., and that's only good news for these types of companies that expect to continue to grow as sports betting gets out of the shadows and becomes mainstream.
Yeah, I find it fascinating with the gambling. It really is a different world than we could have imagined 20 years ago, unless we were looking at Back to the Future movies. But, you know, gambling and marijuana is legal, and people are shooting each other on Lakeshore Drive. So, I mean, I think we've really evolved into a great society, and social media, God bless it, I think it's the reason we're doing so great. But before I digress, one last thing. I've got about 30 seconds for you. Rivian files for an IPO that would give it an $80 billion valuation, and it's never made a car. And you know what, Jim? I can't let you talk about it because Pete is in Game 7, and he's pounding on the glass, and I got to go. So thanks, Jim.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yep. Now to Steve Grzanich in the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's and other fast food restaurants may be preparing to close indoor seating areas and limit hours of operation because of the rising number of COVID cases. McDonald's temporarily closed indoor dining at nearly all U.S. locations in early 2020, but it reopened 70% by last month. It had planned to fully reopen by Labor Day. But last week, the company instructed its franchisees on steps they should take to reclose their dining rooms in areas where the Delta variant is rapidly spreading. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And if I'm smelling soybeans, it must be Steve Alexander with the business of food.
Yes, you are, sir. Today's business of food features none other than Patrick Fitzgerald.
Go Cats.
No, not that one.
No. Actually, I do get confused with two people. One is that Patrick Fitzgerald, and the other was the former state's attorney.
Sure. Well, this Patrick Fitzgerald is in the food business. He's part of a family that's been supplying Chicago restaurants and hotels for over 50 years. He is now focused on a doorstep delivery company he co-founded, Fresh Midwest. It's kind of like a Peapod or Instacart, but with one less middleman. And instead of delivering grocery store food, Fresh Midwest supports local farmers and suppliers and delivers restaurant quality fresh food to your door.
So what we're doing is we're taking our fresh produce, we're taking the restaurant partners that we've had, we're taking other partners like Meats by Lynn's, Cool Commissions, Poultry Commissions downtown, Seafood Merchants. We're bringing all of this restaurant quality merchandise to the consumer, to their doorstep.
Better food for every day is how he puts it. When you go to their website, freshmidwest.com, you'll see the choices. Fresh local produce is the most often bought item, but he says the unique meal kits from restaurants are very popular.
We've partnered with these restaurants to take their dishes, put them in a easily assembled meal kit, so pre-packaged, pre-measured, all the ingredients, and they're all fresh.
So if you have a favorite dish at a restaurant and you'd like to make it at home, Fresh Midwest delivers all of the ingredients. You put it together and you're the hero.
So if you were to click on that, you'd find the wildfire chopped salad, the wildfire cedar plain salmon, the Harry Caray's Cobb salad, the shrimp Cobb salad.
Patrick says it's important for a Fresh Midwest to support local farmers, and he makes a point of highlighting family farms. This week's featured farm is Scaringa Farms. They've been farming the same land for over 81 years in Highland, Indiana. FreshMidwest.com and Patrick Fitzgerald.
Go Cats.
Stop that. Chicago Board of Trade, beans right now, 23 cents higher. That's what you're smelling, Mr. Tom. And corn right now is down about 24, and make that 14 cents per bushel at 5.39. Wheat is trading about 8 cents lower at 7.25. And that's your money on 720 WGN.
Let's talk about this. So I had mentioned earlier a few segments ago about Rivian filing for an IPO to be be valued at roughly $80 billion.
That's
And simultaneously, I don't know if you've read the book, The Cult of We. Have you seen this yet?
Yeah.
Have you read it or no?
I haven't read it, but it's on my list.
I'm about 150 pages in on the WeWork and Adam Neumann. And when WeWork fell apart a couple of years ago, it was only, air quotes, valued at $45 billion. And they actually had product and were losing money. And Rivian hasn't made a thing. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, so Rivian said on Friday that it had submitted the S-1 registration to the SEC. So there was a lot of speculation. Bloomberg had reported on this earlier. There was some speculation about them filing this IPO. So they're aiming to do this around November 25th, so right around Thanksgiving. Of course, that all depends on approval from the SEC. They may not get it. They might, but they might not. Now, as you point out, they have yet to produce anything. But here's what they do have. They have backing from Amazon and Ford. From Amazon, they have on order the delivery vehicles that are electric powered. They have that commitment from Amazon. They have an established factory right here in Illinois in Normal, downstate. They have thousands of reservations for the R1T truck and the R1S SUV. So they have some, you know, some skin in the game there. They're not just kind of saying, hey, we're going to make these widgets sooner than later, eventually. So they have some, you know, they have buyers, they have backers, and they've got some big, you know, financial names attached to them, Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase and Morgan Stanley. But as you say, they have yet to make that car. They did push back the launch of their vehicles due to COVID. Part of that was, you know, factory closures and some shipping concerns and supply chain issues that are impacting everybody. And they have also, you know, they have some big institutional investors like T. Rowe Price and BlackRock and Soros and Fidelity. So they got some big names attached to them. But I think that's kind of everybody's eyes just kind of on the, okay, let's see the car. Let's just see it. Let's do this.
I mean, right. And that's I don't feel like we're in a bubble, so to speak. But when I see that coming off of WeWork that had a product, even though it was losing money, it was valued at something because random people made the valuation. And I mean, not random people. I mean, SoftBank is real. And so are BlackRock and Soros and Goldman and these guys that are valuing this, right? I mean, you agree to a valuation when you make an investment, and that's why you do it. But again, we're looking at something that the only way to make their money back is to spin it public like they're trying to do. And if it goes public, who wants to get it? The retail investor. And then people get mad about the meme stocks and the Reddit stuff. I mean, it's crazy that anybody gets mad about that when these valuations come up that make no sense to any investment banker in 2005 or 1995 based on the numbers and what the business is doing. Hello? Amy? I think we lost her.
I'm back. Are you back?
I just assumed you firmly disagreed with me.
So. I just hung up. No, all of a sudden there was a loud beep, and I couldn't hear you. So anyway, we're back.
Okay. It's all good. Well, I just went off on the $80 billion and buyer beware, and I hope the retail investor doesn't get caught with their you-know-what down. So.
It remains to be seen. I mean, with 100,000 electric delivery vehicle vans that Amazon signed up for, you know, they've got some backing. So we shall wait and see.
So let's talk about PayPal. So PayPal wants to get in on some of the stock trading and seeing what's going on. And everybody has their credit card tied to a PayPal to buy things online, it seems like. And they're exploring a stock trading platform for just customers in the U.S.
Yeah. So CNBC reported that PayPal is looking at ways to let people trade individual stocks. That part of that is that they've hired a brokerage industry veteran to kind of lead this initiative called Invest at PayPal. So that would be kind of competing in that space with like the Robin Hoods and all that, where they're kind of in that retail investor
creative
space.
Creative name.
Yeah, right. Invest. I know they've definitely, it at least it does what it says it will, yes. Right? The name says it all. So we're going to, I'll keep an eye on that. I think that'll be interesting. There's been some speculation, like industry watchers have kind of been talking about this a while, ever since Robinhood really started to hit. And ever since we kind of saw the GameStop and the AMC, stock value driven up by retail investors. There's been other speculation of who else is going to get in this game. You know, Venmo and PayPal are obvious ones to jump in to that. So I'll keep an eye on that, because I think that'll be very interesting to see how that rolls out. Now, at the same time, on the heels of all that I mentioned with GameStop and all that through Robinhood, there is a little bit of talk about among regulators of should there be a little bit like tighter bumpers on this? Should the kind of parameters be a little bit tighter, especially in terms of contests and how you lure people to the platform? So that's, I think, another part of that is how you market these kind of services to consumers.
Well, we got to leave it there, but thanks, Amy, for the updates on those stories. And we know that if you want to buy and sell stocks, there are more than enough platforms for
Indeed.
Everybody to go to.
Indeed. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, Amy. Have a great week.
You too.
And so this is Tom Gimbel. Mary Vanderveld will be very happy. I've moved up to the third favorite fill-in host for the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Wow, so, well, you did that quickly.
You know what? Well, after Friday, I had nowhere to go, but... up. So things are going well. So to the team in the newsroom, to Pete Zimmerman, I don't know if I'll ever be back, but I got to tell you, I had a heck of a fun time. I won't give out Mary Boyle's email address so you could send her notes to say I should be doing more of this, but we'll leave it there. We'll say have a happy Labor Day. I'm in the labor business. We should salute everybody that goes to work every day from home or in the office, whether you work 40 or 80 hours a week or somewhere in between. Nothing gets done in this country without people either plugging things into a keyboard or lifting a shovel or nailing a hammer or doing whatever. So to all the laborers out there, have a great Labor Day. Enjoy your Monday off. And thanks for listening to me for the past couple days.